What if I told you that your life could be completely transformed through meditation? Welcome to Meditate on This, an inspiring podcast where I share true life stories of people whose lives have been completely transformed through meditation. I am your host, Angela Accomando, and I can't wait to go on this journey with you.
Welcome. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in to Meditate on This podcast. Today, I'm excited because I have Kat Fowler, the host of Soul Awakening podcast. She is a certified advanced energy therapist, Reiki master, meditation and yoga teacher. She has been featured in ABC News, New York City Taxi TV, New York Times, The Yoga Journal, Om Yoga Magazine, Natural Awakenings, and so many other places. So I am really excited to have her today. And I found her myself through her podcast, the Soul Awakening podcast. And I got super excited because my teacher, Hector Marcel, and his partner, Stephen McManus, was on. So when I stumbled across that, I was like, oh my goodness, and reached out. And I was like, is there any way you could connect me to her? I would love to have her on my show. And you were so gracious to be like, absolutely, I'd come on because I really want to share all your wisdom with my listeners. So welcome. Thank you so much, Kat.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me. And Hector and Stephen were like probably the funniest interview I've ever done. They were awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I love learning from Hector, is because he teaches such deep wisdom, but he teaches it with, you know, in such a light, fun way that you can digest the depth of what he's teaching you.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So there's so many things I want to ask you because, you know, we're in the midst of this pandemic. And so people's lives are completely shifted. So I do want to just open the floor. I always like to just ask people what brought them to meditation. And then after that, if you could just share with us the wisdom and what you have to tell people during this time now, what has been coming up for you, and just going to open the floor to you because I'm dying to hear what you have to say. So what brought you to meditation?
Okay. Two very big questions. Yeah. So what brought me to meditation was I came from a family my parents been in an ashram. So they were their whole life, and pretty much since they were in their 20s, and my whole entire life, and I'm in my 30s, I was immersed in that kind of culture. And I was raised Catholic, but I wouldn't really say, you know, in quotes, but I wouldn't really say that's how we practiced and lived our life. However, you know, you don't know the gem that's given to you when it's just handed to you. You don't realize what it is. And so I really rebelled against it, especially in my teenage years, and until I had a major breakup when I was in college from my first love. And then I found yoga, and then I went back to meditation. And meditation was always very on and off for me, especially in my 20s, you know, being very wild at the time. And yoga was very grounding, and I would try, and it wasn't accessible. And I had techniques that were given to me and different protocols and practices that were from the ashram I was from that I could use, and a lot was not working. And so when I really got into meditation, like, even though I've always had it, but when it became a non-negotiable was when I had a very difficult time. I had a lot. I turned 30 at the time, and all of my childhood trauma came up at once. A lot of, I don't know if you guys believe in this, but past life trauma came up at once. Mm-hmm. Everything unlocked when I hit 30, and that's just karmically the way it was supposed to be. That was in the blueprint. And so when that happened, it surfaced as massive PTSD and agoraphobia, and I couldn't leave my apartment some days. I couldn't get on the subway. Like, it was very serious. And I didn't even know how to handle something like that. So, and I'm very holistic. I did not want to do the clinical medicated route. And so I tried everything. I tried EMDR, I tried CBT, I tried all sorts of things helping, but not really got me to a place where I could label it and understand what the symptoms were. And this is my personal journey. I'm not, you know, discounting therapy for others. But for me, it wasn't really what was doing anything for me in the right way, especially when it was deep-seated trauma, especially when it's past life trauma. I don't think most conventional therapists understand what that means. Yeah. So, I got really into meditation, and I've done energy healing for a long, long time, but energy healing and meditation were like my saving grace. But I will say that when you're in a state like that and you have that much trauma that you're dealing with all at once, meditation even was very difficult. So I went back to my toolbox. I'm like, okay, I've taught yoga for 11 years. Like, let's see what I can pull from that. So it was really into pranayama, not necessarily like the classic, you know, doing certain things to build heat. It was all about regulating my nervous system and bringing the panic down through breath. And then I got into more mindfulness like techniques, because my brain is just, the trauma brain is very different than a normal brain. So it was just so different for me. So just to center myself and try to ground myself, that was how it started. And then finally my meditation practice really started to come together, and I started using similar techniques to what I was taught. And then it became something completely different. Now it's every day, non-negotiable, at least an hour. It's just how I connect into who I really am. And it's just the days if I don't get to meditate, which is, it's like showering or brushing your teeth. That's how I feel. So it's like, that's how you feel. So that's how I really came to it. It was like, I had it my whole life, didn't realize the beauty and the potency of it until I needed to, and I didn't have a choice. And I was pretty much homebound because of what was going on. And then that was how I started to unearth a lot of the trauma and heal and go through a lot of the trauma. I know some people think that meditation's bypassing. It's definitely not. You know, you definitely learn things, then you have to act them into the world. But for me, that was as potent as for maybe someone else therapy would be.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a mirror, you know, it's a big mirror. So
it really is.
Yeah. So that's how I got into the whole, really seriously into meditation.
Yeah, I can relate to you because I suffered with agoraphobia years ago, and I'm a very extroverted person. So when I tell people that, they're so surprised, but it literally, like, I couldn't even, at the time I was married to somebody else, my first husband, and, you know, he would have to go to the supermarket to shop for food because the thought of leaving the house just overtook me. And for me, I began down the medical route, but it was, for me, it was temporary relief. And then I found myself back in the same place.
It's not to discount medicine. I think it can be very useful for lots of people, but I was like, should I continue to operate and do what I'm doing the way that I'm doing it with the panic that I'm doing and medicate just to get through it? Or should I really go into the heart of what is, I believe, a spiritual crisis going on and dive deep and go to the root and try to really excavate that and work it out so that I don't need to rely on a substance to live my daily life? Mm-hmm. Part of also the reason why I was feeling all that was because my heart was not in what I was doing any longer. And so that was a big part of it too. So there was a lot of factors, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Sometimes when agoraphobia is really bad, you can't even leave your couch. Yeah. Like it's like, it could be that serious, or your bed. And so, but it's amazing for people that are listening that are going through something like this, or even something not as serious, but remotely like it, like you can get out of that. There's ways to do that. Meditation is definitely a route. Not saying it's like you will be cured through sitting for 5 minutes listening to an app, but I mean, it's definitely a route. It's definitely a path, and there's many paths, but it's definitely a path. And for me, it was one of the paths that worked.
And so you talked about briefly, you just said that it was also something you were doing, like you're talking work-wise, that you just didn't want to be doing anymore.
Yeah, I was teaching yoga for a very, very, very long time in New York City and also trainings internationally. And my heart just wasn't in it, in the sense that I love yoga. I believe in it. I believe in the eight limbs. I believe in the principles. But I was moving into more of an energetic I do energy healing. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And it just, I wasn't able to offer that. I wasn't able to speak to that. It felt for me confining and limiting to what I wanted to offer. That's actually where the birth of my podcast happened as well, because I was like, well, I got some things to say and I have to find a way to say it. So, and also, you know, interview people that have the knowledge that I don't have. So, beautiful things come from things when doors close, you know, then you find other routes, but yeah.
Well, I thank you for sharing that, because, you know, I think most people think, oh, I'm at this horrible job and like, yeah, I want to leave and go somewhere else, but you can also leave something that you love and your heart is into, but it's time to transition into something else. You know, like everything is impermanent, even good things that we once loved, like your yoga thing. Cause, you know, we hear all the time people who left like corporate jobs, right? And that's like the thing. Everyone's like, oh yeah, sure. Of course. Nobody wants to be in corporate. But for you to say, you know, I like yoga was my thing, but there was something else I wanted to do. I hope this really touches somebody who may be in this similar situation, because I think when we're doing healing work, like yoga or even meditation, we think this is it. And this is where we have to stay. But you know, our evolution just constantly grows. Like for me, it started with yoga and everybody wanted me to be a yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it, but there's only two teachers that I would take classes from, and they weren't doing it at the time. And then I found meditation. And that's when I was like, no, I want to be a certified meditation teacher. Like that's where my heart's at. And who knows where it's going to go from here. So that's awesome that you shared that, because I was waiting for you to say, oh yeah, I was in this corporate job. I hated it. I didn't think you were going to say, oh yeah, it was yoga and it was time for me to change.
No, I had a very successful career in yoga. I was afforded the ability to travel all over the world, and I had lots of press, and you know, it was like what someone would consider a very successful career in the field that I was in. And I had a beautiful community as well. And I had to walk away from that all from like a soul level, from a spirit level, not because of the community, but because of, like I said, my heart. It was like I had a very clear mission and then it shifted. And I'm sitting there for like 2-3 years, like I'm just not honoring that new call until I just didn't have a choice. But it was that process of switching careers, which I'm going to talk about mine, which is yoga, but for anybody that's contemplating this, you're going to go through that. There was a lot that came with that, because it was a complete loss of identity, because that's who I was for a decade. That's who, like, that was my business. That was my brand. That's who I was. That's who I identified as. Who am I if I don't have this job? Who am I if I'm not doing what I have put my foot on the map as that person? So I had to go through layers. This was like a major shadow period for me, like dark night of the soul of like, well, really, well, who am I then? You know, and this can be on many levels outside of career. This could be for people with divorce. This could be with people with losing, you know, their titles and something, losing their possessions and something, losing their finances. When that stuff happens, you really ask, well, if I don't have XYZ and this title or this degree or whatever, well, who really am I? And that began a big search for me as to like, okay, let's find out, because I don't have a choice. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, you know, right now with everything we're going through globally, people are probably thinking the same thing as when at the end of this, whenever the ending is, I may not have a job. So who am I without that job? And I would also love to hear on more of a soul level what you think this is really about, that this has arisen from the universe on a global level.
Well, this is multifaceted, and there's many layers as to what's happening in many dimensions with this issue. and cosmically too. It's not just this earth thing that we're going through. But I will say that similar to what you said, this is a global reset. Mm-hmm. This is a time that's been written about in many different religions. This is a time, and it's happening now, and it's a global reset, because things are not supposed to be the way that they were, and old systems are crumbling because new systems need to be created and built, because we cannot essentially act like slaves anymore to the financial system, in crushing debt, in crushing pressure financially, which is how humanity has functioned for many years, hundreds of years. All of us are saying, like, what? This is crazy. Like, I think what's happening now is with this global reset, people are having the opportunity to reflect and look at what was that I was doing? What, why was I that hamster on the wheel?
Yeah.
For what reason? And this isn't to put blame on people. This is to say, this is a global thing. And especially in America, I will say that.
Yeah.
That we've been told, well, this is just how it goes. This is what you're supposed to do. And I think right now we're globally going through this shadow period, like the dark night of the soul, where everyone is forced to be at home. Distractions are removed, ideally. I mean, there's still Netflix and alcohol, whatever. But this can be used as a very potent time, because it's not just you having to isolate yourself, which is typically what happens in the beginning of a spiritual awakening, but everybody simultaneously is isolating themselves. So there's no pressure. You don't feel bad for doing so. But I think it really depends on the person listening, on their perspective and how they're viewing it. Are they viewing this as a punishment, or are they viewing this as an opportunity? And I feel with globally what's going on, we're all dealing with a lot of fear. We're all dealing with the systems crumbling and us saying, how do we handle this? Whether it's in our internal family structure, whether it's in financial structures, whether it's in our jobs, whatever. But we have the opportunity then to also reflect on, well, how did it get to the way that it got? There's many layers to that. And that's like a whole nother thing that I won't get into. and okay, even if I don't know that, how can we shift into a newer way of living where we're not stressed all the time, forced to do shit we don't like and we hate, and forced to do things that are just what are, you know, societally expected of us, you know, do this, get this job, get this education, get married, like XYZ, follow these things, be in crazy debt for your wedding, for your mortgage, for your student loans, and then just live to pay that off. That's not how it's going to happen anymore. And I feel, you know, it's very scary when things are crumbling because there's a lot of unknown. But this is a global opportunity for, I think, humans to unify, for us to become like one and really come together from a heart level, from a space of just living out of our heart space and saying, what are we doing? And can we, how can we shift this? And it's not about like, because we're all isolated, right? We can't really meet in person. It's not about us coming together and rioting anymore like it used to be. The protest, the riot, the revolution is individually each person. Every single person matters. And every person, if they can go inwards and use this as an opportunity for spiritual growth, that is what's going to create the shift on a global level. It's not anymore about putting out signs and going in front of a building. It's about in your building, in your home, taking the time to make this about your spiritual growth and priority of who you are inside and what makes you happy and all those things, and unearthing all of the traumas and the shadows that are coming up through fear and sitting with them and dealing with them and becoming responsible, becoming a responsible creator. Because I think we've gotten away, especially in big cities, for a long time of not being responsible for our emotions and our and our energetic state, and we just project it off at everybody, you know. And it's, we can't do that anymore because we just don't have that luxury, and there's so much collective fear that it's just going to add to it. So really our job, especially as meditators, those of you that are listening that meditate, it's to live from that heart space. And I don't, you know, I know you guys practice Buddhist techniques. I don't know the Buddhist techniques, but there is an aspect of living from the heart and sending it out and unifying. And that's really what I think is so important at this moment, but it has to start on an individual level now, because we don't have the option of going outside and creating these, you know, group events or anything like that.
Yeah. So what advice would you give somebody who's, you know, really new or now with what's going on, they're awakening and they're like, well, how do I go inward? What would you say to them?
Well, if it's a brand new thing, it can be a little bit daunting. And I would say there's so much material out there to help you with that. Number one, if you if you don't know that you're going through a spiritual awakening, you're going to think you're like going a little insane until you look up articles or listen to podcasts or something that say, here are some signs that you're going through a spiritual awakening. And then you're like, oh, and there's tons of people that have gone through that, are going through it with you. Like, if you're not alone, the world is going through this right now. Yeah. So just, that's the first thing, to know that you're not alone. Then there's many things that you can do. So if you're starting a meditation path, just start with that. Start with simple apps. Start with meditation. Breathing. If you have a lot of anxiety, do breath work. And my path for me was I worked with healers quite frequently, energy healers in particular, quite frequently, to unearth what was really going on. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You can work with therapists, you know, if you feel overwhelmed in the beginning. Because it can be overwhelming. Or you can just talk to a loved one that you know is receptive and there for your well-being and just to, you know, express what's going on, or journal. Those are some ways. Everybody has a different way. Like, I don't always like to say, you know, energy healing or meditation is the only way. Like, you could do sound healing. You can listen to stuff like that at home, journaling, meditating, yoga. There's a million things you can do. But there's options. And if you try something that doesn't work for you, then try something else. Or sometimes try another teacher in that field. Because, you know, with yoga especially, like, you could try a class and not like it. And it's just, that's, it's not the right style for you. And then you find the style that you like. So, yeah, I don't know if that answered the question that well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's true. It is different for everyone. There is no cookie cutter way. I just wanted to kind of hear a little bit of what you had to say about it. And so is part of what you do with your clients that? Is it, you know, walking them through the process of awakening so it's, you know, easier on them, so they understand it a little deeper and so they go a little deeper? Is that part of what you do with the people you work with?
Well, so I'm not like a coach, you know, like a life coach. So I don't do talk therapy or I'm not a counselor. So I don't do talk therapy sessions like that. But in energy work, what happens is I receive and relay messages from their higher self, their guides, my guides, the angelic realm, so higher dimensional beings that give the truth. Or when I do Akashic readings, it's from the Akashic Library. All you're going to get is the truth there from a soul level. And so sometimes I get messages that I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to say this, or it makes absolutely no sense to me. And then I repeat it because that's my job. That's my duty when I'm getting these messages, and they start crying, or, you know, they have a realization. And so as I'm doing the energy work, these things come to me. As I'm doing the assessment in the beginning of a session, I always do an energetic assessment of the seven chakras and the layers of the aura. That stuff all starts coming, and then that's how we work together. And the benefit is that a lot of times there's so many things that are hidden to the person, but they're very clearly in the field that I can see and work with. And so something that maybe might have been hidden from them or on a subconscious level repressed for years, I could see very clearly, and I'll get the info that they need on it. And just even sometimes the knowledge of, oh yeah, I have this situation, this block from my mom, and it happened when I was 2 years old, and it's prevented me now from living in an open, authentic way because I kept getting shut down since then, and I saw the pattern. Sometimes even them just like realizing that, or me saying it and it, them acknowledging it, will be enough for it to literally release or disperse. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And so that's more what I do. I don't necessarily like do counseling mm-hmm. or coaching.
And can, with everything going on now, you can't really see people in person. Can this also be done virtually?
My majority of my work is in person. Almost all of it, almost all of the energy healing I've done, I've received, and I do is online. And I have people in the UK or Australia that I work with, and they're, or Germany, and they're shocked because we're talking simultaneously. And then usually there's like a maybe like 30 second delay, and then they will feel the energy and they're like, how is this possible?
Wow.
Yeah. And when I work with in-person clients, I don't really physically touch them almost ever. It's only occasionally, almost never. And, you know, when I work with pregnant clients, they're like, oh, is it okay if I have to lay on my side and I can't, you know, move? And I'm like, we could do this where you're at home and I'm here, and then we can do the session. So there's no physical distance. It's a construct of our reality now, but in energy world, there is no distance.
And did you come across this, like, was this part of your healing process, this type of energy work that you do now?
Yeah, I started getting energy work done about 11 years ago. And when I had that really serious stuff going on at 30 and everything was coming to the surface and it was a little bit too much for me to deal with on my own, I worked with several different energy healers. And then I was really getting into, because I was always doing it on friends and family, but it wasn't necessarily structured. Mm-hmm. And so then I really was like, this has changed everything for me. And it got me out of what I would say was a spiritual crisis, or, you know, the inability to function. Mm-hmm. And this is what I can offer to others, because it's just, it's what worked for me and it's what I love. And what I love too is that I think regardless if someone has a major healing in a session or not, especially for people that are brand new to this, when they do a session, it just opens their eyes. Even the fact that I don't touch someone and they'll feel something, that will open their eyes to, like, oh, maybe there's something here that maybe I can't, you know, see with my, or perceive with my senses, but it's there.
Yeah.
There, or when they get a message that I would never have known, but I deliver it and I never met them, and they, you know, it's something from a loved one or from about who they are as a soul. It's undeniable. And then it opens their entire reality to a new realm of existence. And that to me is beautiful. That is like the spiritual awakening for some people. And so that's very fulfilling for me, because I definitely understand being in that position and being very skeptical and being like, yeah, okay, why would I pay for something like that? And then when I see the effects and I get the messages, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then your life changes through the energy work. It depends on the client. It really depends if the person is open and willing. You just have to be willing.
Yeah.
If someone isn't willing to be open or to heal, it's not going to work. So.
Yeah. And is that why meditation is like so important to you? Because it really just keeps you open to hearing the messages that you need to hear for yourself and your clients?
Meditation is my link to my higher self, my guides, and everything unseen. That is how I go in. That is like how I charge my phone. It's like, I can't describe to you. That is the way that you get to know who you are. Mm. That's how you get to go inside and you really discover your inner world, like who you are, why you're here. These are, if that's your goal, mm-hmm. you unearth so much. It's an entire world that's available to you that you have to be still and receptive to tap into. And if you're not able to still yourself, and I'm not saying stop the thoughts, because they're going to happen, but I mean just be physically still and breathe and be open and receptive to guidance from a higher, you could say, I believe in God, but whatever, you know, higher self, source, whatever. It happens in meditation. It happens in meditation, but it's a state that you allow yourself to become, to be. It's not like, oh, I'm meditating now. I would say the first, sometimes if it's a really intense day, like 20 minutes of my meditation is just me getting grounded and settled. Mm-hmm. And then the meditation happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other days, you know, you can just pop right in, but.
Yeah. What advice would you give someone who is trying to start to meditate and they're like, what advice would you give them to start a meditation practice and be successful at it?
I would say, don't be hard on yourself in the beginning. It's like everybody, I think, finds it at the right time. My whole life felt this pressure that I should be meditating all the time. And I just was not in a place where I was even close to being able to do that. So just don't be hard on yourself. If you try, you're just like, nope, I can't. Like, maybe it's not now, but it may be down the line in the future. And I would definitely say, do breathing work. If you have a lot of trouble concentrating, just do breath work. Regulate your breath, do some pranayama, whatever you can find that will slow down the breathing. That'll change the brainwave state. And for me, And I'm sure for you and for anybody that has done this, consistency is everything. Because even now, and I do it very regularly. If I, let's say, stop for 2-3 days, I can see the next time I tap in, I'm like, oh God, here we go again. I got to like get over this hurdle. It's almost like lifting weights or something, or a yoga practice, whatever. It's like, you need to be consistent. And by consistent, I mean, you can start with 5 minutes if you're new. Yeah. Just start with 5 minutes and then build it up to 10 and then 15 and then 20. And then maybe you start to let go of the guided apps and you just sit there for 5 and then you build it up longer and longer. But you have to be consistent, because otherwise you just won't see the progress. You just won't see it. If you're very lucky and karmically you just sit in meditation, you have like a vision of, you know, something beautiful, then you are very lucky and you're probably the exception.
Yeah. And so did the pressure to meditate, did that come from your parents?
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure.
That's so funny. Not many people can say that.
Well, it's similar. Well, they could say it about religion, I'm sure. They have a pressure to go to church, or they had a pressure to go to temple or whatever it was. It's just, that wasn't it for me. It was meditation and listening to that song. Yeah, those are my two.
That's so awesome. I love your parents and I never met them. Oh. You guys like hang out now together and do things that they wanted you to do like 20 years ago?
I don't know. I appreciate my parents a lot. I think about it all the time. Like, they were the hippie in a way. They weren't hippies because they're not really like, you know, super unconventional, but they were the way showers. Like, that generation of baby boomers that's in their 50s, 60s, and 70s right now, that were the first vegetarians, the first meditators, the ones that listened to Yogananda, the ones that were like in that movement when nobody else was, because society was so much more oppressive at that time. I'm like, wow, kudos to you. That was so hard. Like, they paved the way for us. Yeah. And we are very lucky, because right now, like, it's everywhere. Like, everyone's vegan and meditating and doing yoga. And that's fucking awesome. But like, we have it easy because now everything's available to us so quickly. So I really give them props, because I'm like, wow, like, you guys, you were like, you had to go up against a lot. Like, my mom, because they met in New York City, my mom went to Juilliard, and she would always tell me how there was only one single health food store on the west side of Manhattan. That's it.
Wow.
Like, that's it. The way you got your information was through going to satsang programs, going to yoga, whatever. Like, one yoga studio was really just metaphysical bookstores. And there was like two. It's like a very different world that they lived in. And when I think of that, I'm like, well, thank you very much for paving the way and making it so easy for me, in a sense. They didn't make everything easy for me. So it was something that was very challenging, but all of us have that with our parents. That's why we have parents. So.
Yeah. I know. When I first learned on the fact that I picked my parents, I fought that so hard. Like, no, I didn't. And my teacher was like, yes, you did. And I was like, I would never pick them.
Yes, you did. Everyone did. And it's for a reason.
Yeah. And you know, once you learn these teachings, they're really just healing. You know, I mean, it's a hard process. At least it has been for me. You know, like I just had an argument with my mother last week that I haven't had in like years. Mm-hmm. But it showed me where my work is at. It's like, oh, I thought I was, no, this is where my work is at. Like, thought I was over that, but I'm not. And there's like layers to all of this work, you know?
100%. And I think with the parents in particular, if someone's listening, they're like, what the hell are these guys talking about? Yeah. I would say, look at your biggest challenges with the parents individually. Like, look at the biggest challenges that you had with one caretaker. It doesn't have to be your biological parents, your caretakers, whoever, you know, it is, or it could be your biological parents. If they've even, you know, you were adopted or whatever the case is, look at the biggest challenge that you have with them and then think, what is the lesson that I'm supposed to learn? Mm-hmm. So if you were constantly abandoned by a parent, then maybe it's to learn self-trust and to be independent, to learn independence. If you were constantly, if there was abuse or something, it could be forgiveness. That's your, like, that's the main lesson of that karmic relationship that you signed up for. It could be if you were constantly, I don't know, there's many things, you know, if there was a lot of betrayal and because of that, you don't trust people, it's going to be trust. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many things to look at. And I think are the lessons that come with the relationship with our parents are the most potent ones because they're so heavily ingrained because they've been with us our whole life. And those take the most awareness. Like there's, you need a high level of awareness and a lot of forgiveness. Because it's not like, because we can go into the like, well, it's their fault. You know, they messed me up. It's like, no, if you think of it from a perspective of like, you picked this journey, then they are the facilitators of those lessons for you. And God bless them because that was probably very challenging for them when we were all teenagers.
I know. Last week when I had that big argument with my mother, I went back to that place of blame and pointing the finger. And then I was sitting at the kitchen table with my husband and I said, you know what? I need to call my mother back and apologize because this is not about her. This is about me. And I text her and said that to her. And I mean, a few years ago, especially 10 years ago, I would have never done that. I would have stayed in that place of it's your fault and you did this and like, look at how you're making me scream at you. But I was like, I went back and you know, we had a different conversation.
I love that you said that too, because like what I was saying earlier with the personal responsibility for our emotions, oh my God, whenever anyone's like, you made me, I'm like, no one made you. Those emotions were yours. They were within. They were the catalyst. They let it spark out, but you can't create a fire if the person's not holding gasoline already.
Yes.
So it's like, it's the level of personal accountability and responsibility that comes with this spiritual practice that I think is really important. And also I wanted to say, like, I know there might be people listening that don't have parents or that were, they passed early. And and also there's people that have parents that may be abusive and very not safe for them to be around. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying like, yes, forgive them, be near them all the time if that's the case. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the lesson is learning how to love someone and love yourself and forgive them and forgive yourself for the anger that you've held, even if you cannot speak to them ever again because mm-hmm. of things that they've done. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to stress that because I think sometimes there's like this shame put on people like, oh yeah, you should forgive them all the time. And like, you have to be this perfect family unit and sit at the table together. And for some people, especially in abuse and alcoholic situations, it is not an option. And that is perfectly okay. And I just think, but it's still, the work is not to hold the anger, but it's to forgive them and say, I love you so much. Thank you for the lessons. We don't need to be near each other. I respect you. Thank you for the soul lessons, but we're done.
I call that loving from a distance. That's a good point you brought up where it's true. Like that whole thought of, well, I forgive you. And this is your X, Y, and Z, your mother, your father, your brother, or whatever. Even if there's abuse and really unhealthy behavior, you have to do this because they're your family member is a really old way of thinking where it's like coming into, like you said, that forgiveness and letting go and saying, you know, thank you for these lessons. And I'm going to love you I love a lot of people from a distance, you know? And I truly do. So that's a really, really good point to bring up. Wow. This was great. I knew I was going to have a great interview with you. I was really excited to have you on. So can you share with everybody where we can find you?
Yes. You can find me online on Instagram. I'm at Kat Fowler. And for sessions, you could just go to katfowler.com. And I don't know how soon this interview will be out, but for the period of quarantine, I'm doing a discount of 30% off. So you can enter the code HEAL. And however long this quarantine lasts, that's how long the discount will be there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And this is a great time to work with someone like Kat on some deep things, because all we're going to have is time to really sit, and a lot of stuff is going to arise as we're sitting alone, as we're not, you know, busying ourselves with a lot of the things that we usually busy ourselves with. Because even though I'm on this path, even being quarantined, it's really putting me into an even deeper place of we're just here. Like, you can't even go to the cafe to work. Like, you're here and your family's here with you.
Right.
So what better time to hop into, you know, a spiritual path and just start dipping your feet into this type of work?
Yeah. And I think if it's overwhelming, like, definitely reach out, definitely do sessions. But I will say, I do have a lot of faith in people, like, and just their ability to get through something. Not to say that if you need help, don't reach out, but definitely do. But I do feel like this is an amazing reset, an amazing opportunity. And I think a lot of people are stepping up to the plate. Like, a lot of meditators, sensitives, intuitives, light workers, whatever you want to say, you know, they're all stepping up to the plate and they're realizing the opportunity that they have and the responsibility that they have in their communities compared to the people that are completely unaware of life outside of the way that it's been shown to them on TV and you know, programmed within them. So I think it's a beautiful time, and I'm really happy to assist in any way.
Yeah. And it's also a great time to listen to Soul Awakening podcast because you have amazing guests that will really, when I saw the holistic psychologist on there, I absolutely love her. Her post really. So I also encourage everyone listening to also, this is a great time to binge listen to Soul Awakening podcast and really allow like insights and awakenings to happen.
Thank you. I would say also, if you're just starting, the very first episode is like a big list of what happens when you're just starting your spiritual awakening. And that's one of the episodes I'll still get emails to this day about, where people are like, I didn't realize this until I listened. And now I'm like, wow, this makes so much sense where I'm at and what I've been feeling. Mm. So I would just start at episode one. And there's
I'll make sure I put the link to the first episode in the show notes too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much, Kat.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This is great. I can't wait. So thank you so much, and stay safe and stay healthy, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Meditate on This podcast. I hope you were inspired today. If you're not a subscriber, go ahead and subscribe so you'll be notified of every story as they're shared. I would be so grateful if you left a review, rated it, and shared it with a friend. This helps bring these inspiring messages to more people in the world. And if you'd like to bring more peace and happiness into your life, and you're interested in starting a meditation practice, make sure you join my free meditation challenge. You can sign up for it at meditateonthispodcast.com, or there's a link in the show notes below. For daily inspiration, you can follow me on Instagram at Angela Accomando. Have a wonderful day. And remember, there's transformation through meditation. Ciao for now.